is Your Working Life, a podcast that provides you with tools, inspiration, and resources so you can enjoy your career and love your life. I'm Caroline Dowd Higgins. I'm a speaker, an author, and an executive coach. And today, I welcome the dynamic duo of Mary Frances Winters and Marisha Reese. They're going to show us how to have bold and inclusive conversations at work that includes polarizing topics such as race, religion, and politics. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Absolutely. So happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
I'm thrilled and I'm so tickled that both of you are here. What a treat. I want to set this global audience up so they understand the context, because your incredible book called We Can't Talk About That at Work, How to Talk About Race, Religion, Politics, and Other Polarizing Topics, first came out, the original book came out in 2017. And Marisha, you are new to this authorship team, and you've re-released it because of what's happening in the world right now. And I am so glad that you did, because timing is everything. And my goodness, ladies, we need this book. But I want to pass the baton to you and Mary Frances, maybe get us started, since you're one of the original authors from the first book, to help us understand context and why this book matters today.
Thank you so much. This book is critical today, and even more so than in 2017, because we find ourselves in an extremely polarized world. We are not talking to each other in constructive ways. We're talking past each other. I think social media has something to do with that, because we can communicate in sound bites and lose the context, misinterpret, and we don't have the skills. We maintain in our book that we don't have the skills necessary to have these difficult conversations. And they are difficult because people feel very strongly about their perspectives and their worldviews. And what we're finding ourselves in a binary, we're finding ourselves in a situation where it's I'm right, you're wrong, I'm right, and there's nothing in between. This book talks about where we have to find a way to have the conversation where we absolutely learn to listen to each other and to be able to think that perhaps my perspective is not the only perspective.
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, as you shared with the first book coming out in 2017, and I was not a part of it, but with this book, you know, we really, as your listeners, I'm sure, are experiencing and know that there's just so much going on in the world today. You know, the polarization, and maybe even more polarization than we've experienced in 2017. And so, with this new edition, and I'm so honored to be a part of it, we updated some of that data that we had before. We added new examples of things that are happening now, and it's really just a great guide to get folks started on how to have these conversations. Because, you know, you talked about the title, Caroline, we can't talk about that at work, because that's what people used to say, right? You can't talk about race, religion, politics. You leave that outside. But we know that is not possible. People cannot just turn those things off. And we wanted to create something that supports people and organizations in opening and creating a safe space for folks to have conversations. So I'm very excited to be part of this second edition.
Mm. Well, I love the book because it taught me so much, and I'm a lifelong learner, so I appreciate that. But I know it's going to be incredibly valuable to others who read it, because this is a really difficult time. And I think often we find ourselves silenced because we're afraid to talk about things. And I love that you create a model to really teach us how to develop these skills. So I will let the two of you flip for it, which one wants to start first. But tell us a little bit more about the model and how we can learn this skill of having conversations that are not necessarily a debate, but an opportunity to listen and learn.
Yes, thank you. The model is really simple, but it's not necessarily easy. And so it starts with self-examination, self-understanding, recognizing who you are culturally and where you got your values and beliefs. So if I grew up in Niagara Falls, New York, that gives me a particular worldview. Someone who might look like me, I identify as an African-American woman, someone who might look like me, but grew up in Kenya, probably has a very different worldview and a very different cultural frame because of their environment. And so we first have to recognize that we are all cultural beings, if you will. And culture includes a lot. It's not just my race and my gender. It's my the part of the world that I grew up in. It's my profession. So it's my religion. So all of those things play into where I got my worldview. And oftentimes we take our own worldview for granted, right? It's just who we are. We don't really think about it. And sometimes we assume that everybody else has the same worldview, or they should have the same worldview. So that first step in the model is really understanding self. And we have a few self-assessments in the book to help people, you know, to do that. And then it's the other thing about the self understanding, it's then goes to other understanding. Understanding that others may have a different worldview. And this is where the listening comes in. And we like to say that if you don't feel that you have examined your own biases, that you have really done this self-work, we don't even recommend that you get into some of these deep polarizing conversations. And if you do find yourself in one, that you just listen because you haven't really done your own work first. So that's the first step in the model and in the process.
You know, I think, ladies, it's such an important skill for all of us to listen. I think often people just speak, they listen to respond, they don't listen to listen. So that's a good lesson for everybody.
And it's very hard to do.
Yes, I agree. Marisha, I have a question for you, because there's no doubt that these topics, these issues that are happening in our world, and we can touch on some of them in just a bit, are encompassing our brains all the time. And what I read that you two wrote in the book that really resonated with me is we can't turn off our brains when we come to work. You know, we're processing, we're thinking, these things often deeply impact us. And that's made it difficult to suppress these feelings at work. And by that, I mean some of the real world events that are particularly tumultuous. So Marisha, how do we begin to create that safe space at work to talk about these things?
Right. So I think that in one way, it's for organizations and leaders to make it clear that it's okay to talk about these things, right? And because we spend so much time at work, majority of our day is spent there, and we want it to be a place, as you said, you know, that feels safe, that is good for our physical and mental well-being. And I think by having a space where you know, okay, I can talk to people at work about these things and not feel that I'm going to get, you know, looked down upon, or they're, you know, we're going to get into an argument, makes me feel better about being able to go to work. But it's not as simple as just saying organizations need to have space or open the space for conversations, because they have to be prepared to do so. And not everyone or every organization is ready. And so we talk about that in the book, as well as, you know, assessing readiness. So individual readiness and organizational readiness to have these conversations, because, Caroline, it really is, you know, developmental in nature, the way that we approach this model, and then our work in diversity, equity, inclusion is developmental. And so some people may not be ready to have the conversation, and you have to recognize that. And some people may not even want to have the conversation. And so we have to recognize that. So as Mary Fran said, it's not easy. It probably will take time, but I think if organizations create that space and environment and culture around having conversations, then that can really help people as they go into work and know, you know, I don't have to shut this off. I have somebody I can go to at work and really, you know, have a productive dialogue, not a debate, have a productive dialogue about these polarizing events and issues that we keep, you know, keep hearing about in the news and keep talking about.
I'm so grateful for your language, dialogue, not debate. And I think often I've been in scenarios where people just dive into the debate, right? And it becomes contentious. And you know, there's a time and a place for that in some scenarios, but it can be very triggering. And before we talk about triggers, I want to go back because, Marisha, you said something, and Mary Frances, you shared earlier that we need to start with ourselves and do the work about ourselves first. So ladies, can you go a little deeper and tell me, what does that self-work look like? Because I imagine there are a lot of people listening that are saying, okay, I get this intellectually, but what next?
Yeah, I think that the self-work, first, one should look at their values, and write those values down. What is it that you will not compromise on? What is it that you value deeply? You know, it could be honesty, it could be, you know, integrity, it could be, you know, the ability to bring my authentic self to the, you know, to the workplace. We have to be intentional about knowing what our values, just like an organization has values, right? And they expect employees to live by those values. So an individual should have values. So it's an exercise with yourself to say, you know, who am I? What do I stand for? Because when you get into a conversation, knowing what your own triggers will be. So as an example, let me just give you my own personal example. So I care very deeply about equity and inclusion. And I've had so many experiences in my life where I feel that I have been in inequitable, you know, situations. So I know that's a trigger for me. So that if somebody says something that goes against my own belief system, or I think it does anyway, that might be something that I would respond to in a way that might not promote dialogue. So recognizing that that's a trigger for me, I need to practice. So if this comes up in a conversation and I know that's a trigger that's something that's going to really rattle me to my core, how am I going to respond so that the conversation can continue? So one way to respond would be take a deep breath. You'll be able to engage that emotional intelligence and then say to the individual, oh, that's an interesting perspective. Can you tell me more about that? So that you're keeping the dialogue going, even though it might be difficult. Now, so having said that, you also might recognize that if something is just so triggering for you because of your past experience, that if that comes up, you're going to have to excuse yourself from the conversation. That should be okay too, to be able to say, you know, thank you for that perspective. I'm going to have to disengage right now because that's something that's really near and dear to my heart. And I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to continue this in a productive dialogue. So it's like knowing how you're going to respond when topics come up that you know are going to be difficult for you.
I love that, because a couple of things that I'm pulling out of that, tell me if I'm gleaning this accurately. So lead with curiosity, tell me more, create that space, and also have a few of those responses in your back pocket. So if you're caught off guard, you have an opportunity to share something that doesn't escalate the tension, but can honor the person talking to keep the conversation going. Is that fair?
That's right. Now, in some extreme situations, I liken this to the sort of a normal distribution curve. So you're going to have the extremes. You know, you're going to have people who are just what I call the haters, right? And I don't know what to do with those people. I don't know what to do with those people who are avowed people who just, you know, just hate whatever is different from them. But we're talking about this normal distribution curve. There are like 66, 68% of the people who are in this scattergram, think of a scattergram, and they're scattered all over in this middle part. And those people want to have the conversation for the most part. Those people want to learn for the most part. But as Marisha said, this is developmental and they're at different places. And so we try to meet people where they are in the conversation. And it's really helpful when that person has done their own work to know where they are.
I love that. Ladies, we'll be right back after a quick break. I'd like to tell you about a special offer. If you want to bring your podcast to life or up your podcast game, you can get up to 2 months of free podcasting service with Libsyn using my special code CDHWORK. The Libsyn team will get your podcast on Apple and Spotify and give you access to critical stats and all the support you need to sound your best and grow your show. Use my special code CDHWORK. Finding the right speaker for your event is a tremendous responsibility. You need a speaker who will work within your budget and engage your audience. Whether you're looking to retain or grow top talent, create a healthy workplace culture, or prevent burnout in your organization, I can create customized content to help you recharge, reignite, or reinvent your career. Let's talk about how I can help you achieve your special event goals. Connect with me at caroline.higgins.com. So, Marisha, I want to pass the virtual baton to you. You also wrote about how important it is to try to find common ground, because clearly sometimes agreement is just not there in a conversation, but there's a way that we can empathize with the person even if we disagree. So tell us more about that and perhaps give an example.
Yeah, sure. So I can give an example of, let's talk about, so one of the major polarizing maybe issues in the U.S. might be around gun control. And you know, we've had many school shootings and different things. And so people may, you know, think we need stronger laws around gun control. And so we know that's polarizing. We know we have very different sides of the fence on that. And so when you think about shared meaning, we're trying to think about, okay, what do we have in common, right? What are those beliefs that we can come to agreement on and then start having the dialogue? And so for something like gun control, that may be like, we want all children to be safe, right? I believe that both sides of this this polarizing topic can agree that they want, you know, all children to be safe. And so it's like coming to that, like, okay, because when you're coming to the table, Caroline, especially if it's someone, right, who has that differing belief, you have to be able to kind of, you know, everybody soften themselves, like take down those guards, right? And so finding common ground is how you're able to do that. So it's now that we're at a place where it's like, oh, we do have something in common. Now let's talk about and figure out, you know, learn more about each other and our differences. And so you had asked Mary earlier, Mary Frances, about kind of that self-understanding. And one of the tools we talk about in the book is a tool that measures one's cultural competence and how they experience difference. And so when you're at a place of polarization, which, you know, we're talking about here with these topics, you want to get to a place where we are thinking we're all the same. We know we're not all the same, but to get out of that polarization mindset, we need to come to a place where we're like, oh, okay, I see how we're similar, how we have these similar beliefs. And so that's the idea of the shared meaning, because we feel like you can't really have an effective dialogue or conversation until you're able to get to a space where we see each other as similar, having similar values. Mary Frances mentioned the values at the top of the podcast, you know, having those similar values that we can connect on. And now, okay, I can let my guard down and have a good conversation, hopefully with this other person.
This is such an incredible opportunity to learn how to have these conversations. And I think it's certainly important for the grown-ups in the world of work, but I'm thinking, gosh, these are skills that we need to empower the children with. So as they grow and begin to have these conversations, they're equipped with these skills as well. And I'm going to tug on the thread here, because you have created this facilitator certification. And Mary Frances, if I remember correctly, this actually happened after the first edition of the book, and it's going like gangbusters, right? You're facilitating trainings for people to lead these conversations in organizations. Would you please share a little more about that? And I know the Merck example, the Merck Pharmaceutical Organization, has been wildly successful.
Yes, thank you. And I'll have Marisha come in and talk a little bit more about Merck specifically. But the three-day certification program gives individuals the skills to facilitate our content that comes from the book. So you can facilitate a 2, 3, or 4 hour experience where you are providing people with the tools and the skills from the book to enable them to more effectively have conversations across difference.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Marisha, tell us about Merck.
Yes, yes. And so, Caroline, this is one of the new things in the book. So this is a brand new chapter we put in the book to talk about the program and then how two organizations were able to kind of actualize this within the organization. So Merck has, they've probably been doing this for the past, since the very first program, we had someone from Merck in there. And ever since, they have been participating and have had several private sessions for their internal employees. So they, as you know, Merck is a global company. So this topic resonates globally as well. They've been able to have sessions where I remember our contact from Merck said that, you know, he was facilitating in English, but had to have an interpreter in another language for that, you know, audience. But so just wanting to share that this is, you know, this is applicable across the world. And so with them, they're really trying to, they've implemented in a couple of ways. So one is delivering the training, as Mary Frances said. So they've delivered a lot of training sessions and experiences to leaders across the organization. And recently he told us that, you know, they fill up quicker than a Taylor Swift concert. So people are really excited to be a part. But another way is being able to take some of the concepts that, you know, from the book and embed it into other areas. So one of the examples they provided was how they've embedded it into their leadership coaching. So there's certain things in the book that they've been able to incorporate into other things. So maybe it's not a full-blown training, but they embedded it into that that coaching aspect. And so that's the Merck example. They have been, like I said, they've been with us for years, and they're having just great success around just building that internal capacity for people to be able to feel comfortable about having the conversations, or at least starting to have them. I think, you know, there's only so much you can do in a training, right? And so it's a starting point, but to help people like to really understand the model and start building those skills to have the conversations.
I love it because Merck is also scaling this, right? So they're empowering people around the world that work for this organization to learn these skills.
Yes, to learn the skills and facilitate them. So the folks that go through the program, they're, you know, located all over, right? And so, like you said, so they're scaling it because the one person that in the role of like learning, not one person, but they have more than one, but you know, the person in the role of learning and development or diversity and inclusion can't touch everybody.
Right.
So this is their way, like you said, to be able to spread it out through the organization and have those kind of ambassadors, if you will, situated in different regions. So yes, of course.
So ladies, as we wrap, and gosh, it's sad, the time goes by so fast. I could talk with you both all day. But you know, we've heard in the world of this concept called cancel culture, where people often have been fired or let go or canceled, and I'm putting that in air quotes, if they've said the wrong thing. So you have a beautiful philosophy of giving grace, so we can learn and have an open dialogue. Say a little bit more about that as we wrap today, because I think that is so imperative. These are volatile times, emotions are heightened and high, and we've got to figure out how to get through it together.
Yes, absolutely. If we continue to shut people down because they've said the wrong thing. So again, going back to my normal distribution curve, there are some people who are just, I don't know what to do with them, right? And that's a small percentage though, right? That on this normal distribution curve. But for other people who genuinely make a mistake, what do we do when people make a mistake? You know, we try to support them in learning something new. Let's take piano as an example. And so if you're learning the skill of playing the piano, you're going to make mistakes. And so if somebody makes a mistake and you say, oh, you can't learn to play the piano anymore because you've made a mistake, we're going to cancel you, you're not going to be allowed to play the piano anymore, well, you'd never learn. And so we do have to offer some grace because the, you know, intent and impact are important. And I know that when people say, yeah, well, I didn't intend to, but it had an impact. So there's a way to handle that too. We can apologize. We can move on. How many times in the world have we, you know, said or done the wrong thing and have had to apologize? So in this topic though, we seem to be more apt and more ready to just cancel. And so we believe that we have to offer some grace. And the person who has said something wrong or done something wrong, they need to take responsibility for it genuinely learn from it. And that's the atmosphere and the climate that we're trying to encourage organizations to embrace.
Mary Frances Winters and Marisha Reese, I am so grateful for both of you. I learned so much from you. I love your book. It is called We Can't Talk About That at Work: How to Talk About Race, Religion, Politics, and Other Polarizing Topics. And of course, it's available on Amazon and all major book retailers. But ladies, tell us how we can continue to follow you after the show.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And our website is wintersgroup.com. And we also are both on LinkedIn, Instagram. And I think that's it. That's where we stop with the social media. So LinkedIn and Instagram, but the company as well. So we are individually on those, and our company, the Winters Group, is also on those. So we invite everyone to follow us and learn more about the great things we are doing to make the world a better place.
Well, Mary Frances and Marisha, you are helping to make that happen, and I'm deeply grateful for both of you, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to you as well.
You are so welcome. Your Working Life is now available on all major podcast platforms, and leave us a review to help new listeners find us online. And a special shout out to my extraordinary podcast colleagues, Laura Deck, Executive Director of Publicity and Communications, and Claire McInerney, Executive Producer. Thank you for making this show awesome for our global audience. We now have listeners in 34 countries. I'm Caroline Dowd Higgins. Thanks for listening.